Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest episode of the You Should Run podcast. I'm your host, Tony Heil, council member in Bridgeport, Pennsylvania. And if you've listened to the podcast, you know that I've talked with people from every state, from Maine to Hawaii, Florida to Alaska, and of course, every other state in between. From borough council like myself and school board all the way up to U.S. Senate, every election is important. There are 500,000 elected offices in this country. Many of them go uncontested or poorly contested with, you know, blowout wins one way or another. And today, I've talked a lot about how the most important elections, most important part of government, good or bad, is in state legislatures. And I'm going to be talking to someone who is trying to bring good to a situation that many of us can see as bad. Georgia is one of the most important states in the country when it comes to elections. In the past few years, some conspiracies, some challenges, but also a really great Democratic Party, I think. A Democratic Party that is very different from what it was when I first got involved in politics. And someone who was only being bored when I first got involved in politics, which makes you feel old. My guest today is Ashwin Ramaswamy. He's from Johns Creek, Georgia. He is running for the state legislature in Georgia, and he is going to talk about what has motivated him to run for the state Senate, his unique opponent, and hopefully why you should run too. So, Ashwin, thanks for talking today.
Thanks for having me on, Tony.
So I always start with this question of, have you always been politically engaged? You are a younger person running for office, but you know, there's a very different way for you to be engaged than I was when I started. So what made you interested in being involved in politics?
I've always been interested in the current events and political news. I think it started when I was in middle school, when one of my teachers gave us a copy of the Wall Street Journal to read every morning. And I started reading it, and I just started learning a ton about what's going on in the world, started to realize there's a lot of things happening, and we're in one corner of the world, but we have the ability to learn about it and maybe even talk about it, maybe even change it as well. Mm-hmm. But I did do my undergrad in computer science, so my background has been in technology. I didn't envision myself always being someone who's completely like going in politics or running for office. But what I soon learned was, so I did my undergrad, I was over at Stanford in computer science. A lot of people go there, work on startups, do all the Silicon Valley stuff. But what I soon realized is that the government actually needs people who understand technology. So I started working in the federal government in 2020 on cybersecurity and election security. And that's the time where it really hit home for me that public service can be a career, because I saw the value that my skills had actually brought to the government, and I was doing way more impactful work than just working at a tech company.
So I started this by offline talking about how, like, the TikTok conversation this week, you can see people who maybe don't understand technology but voting on it. From your experience and understanding it and also working in government, what do you think that people in politics that are making policy decisions don't understand about computer science and things of that nature?
I think it's just that for a lot of the people who are in politics, computer science is just, it's one out of many other issues. It doesn't have as central a focus for them, because a lot of folks have been around since before the internet was a thing, and before all these different technologies have really taken play such a big role in our lives. And I think because of that, what they're missing is things which young folks like me actually have. We're digital natives. We mm-hmm. grew up with the internet. We understand both the good and the bad that the internet plays, but we also realize that it's a really important part of our lives. Mm-hmm. And you can't just think of it as something that's very similar to technologies in the past. A lot of it is different. And there are certain things that only folks like us can really understand in terms of how things work. It's not just enough to know in theory. I think people who have actually coded, actually built these systems, actually have a better perspective in terms of how you can actually fix them and how to regulate them, how to work with them as well.
So what do you think needs to be fixed? You know, are there things actually need to be fixed when it comes to computers and information technology? Or are people kind of misguided and we should be more free-flowing about it?
I think just generally what we have is we have a misbalance of talent, where a lot of the people who are working in computer science, learning these different technologies, understanding how to use them, almost all of them are going to the private sector, mm-hmm. and not enough folks are going to the public sector. You think about incentives. the private sector's incentive is to make money, which is just how it works. That's how, you know, big corporations work, shareholders, et cetera. But you need to have a strong government which can actually counterbalance, regulate when needed to curb the excesses of what's going on. What we see now is that because there aren't enough people going to government, everyone's going to the private sector. Mm-hmm. There isn't a strong enough voice which is speaking for the people in terms of how do we keep people safe? How do we deal with those kinds of things? And what ends up happening is that then a lot of tech policy is captured by lobbyists, industry, because you don't have strong enough voices within the government. And this has been a problem through all levels of government. It's gotten better over the years with the federal government. There's been a lot of initiatives to bring more technologists into the federal government, but it's even worse in the states because people often don't realize how much the states deal with technology and deal with our daily lives as well.
Yeah, I've talked with people of different backgrounds that aren't represented enough in politics. So like only one or two states have a majority female legislature. But as you see more younger people getting involved in politics and running for office, and we have eventually a majority of people in a state legislature who are digital natives, how do you think that will change politics in a state legislature? That's what you're running for. Do you think that once we get to that tipping point where most of the people in the Georgia or Pennsylvania, where I'm from, legislature don't just use computers but are like real natives of it, do you think that's going to change policy in a significant way?
I think we'll end up having a more balanced approach to policy around technology and really everything. I think right now a lot of policy is coming out of from a perspective of fear or ignorance when you're not really understanding what you're regulating or what you're dealing with. I think the first step is once we have folks who understand how these things work, we'll just have more informed policy and it'll be better informed. If you look at the history of tech policy, that there's many examples of this where the idea being that, for example, when people passed Section 230 back in the 90s in Congress, which ended up creating a lot of what we see today with social media, there were unintended consequences. And I think people are always careful in terms of how can we pass the right framework needed for technology to thrive and really benefit us. And as we see more and more new technologies coming, I think hopefully we'll be able to catch up in an easier way. If the next AI boom comes or the next cyber technology comes or quantum, all these different things, we need to have people in power who can actually be nimble and deal with these issues as they arise, as opposed to trying to clean up after already like bad things have already happened too.
It's like if you're going to Central America, you should probably know how to speak Spanish. And if you're going to be talking about technology, you should be able to speak the language of technology.
Exactly. And it's important not just to rely on lobbyists, right? You need to have that knowledge within the representatives themselves.
So with that in mind, why the state legislature? Why have you decided to run for the state Senate in Georgia when you could do other things? What makes this important for you?
I decided to run because I realized that a lot of big systemic change needs to start at the state and local level first. Mm-hmm. You've seen all the gridlock in Washington. If you're changing stuff at the moment, it's really at the margins, right? And the only way to really change things is you need to first start at the local and state level and show that, hey, here's a smaller version of this bigger idea, and then allowing other states to learn from that and finally making something nationwide. So I really wanted to work at the state level because that's where I saw the biggest need, where I saw that there's absolutely no one like me in the Georgia State Legislature. And I knew I would immediately have an impact in terms of just bringing these new perspectives to bear. So that was one reason. Another reason was also politics is often about what's the right time, what's the right opportunity. And in my case, not only would I be this unique person in the state legislature, but the current state senator from my hometown got indicted with Trump for trying to overturn the 2020 election results, which is precisely the opposite of what I was working on in 2020. So I saw this opportunity where it's not just a time for me to bring my new perspective, but it's also a time to make sure we hold those accountable, those who are responsible for things like Jan 6th, undermining our vote and our democracy. And I felt like these two things coming together could really make sure that we have a win and we're able to move this district and the state forward.
You know, I have been following Georgia because I've had a couple people from Georgia on the podcast. And the Democratic Party in Georgia is very different from how it was when I first got involved in politics 25 years ago almost. I'm feeling very old thinking about that. But then you had Zell Miller, who eventually went and spoke at the RNC, and he gave a more right-wing response than some of the other Republicans there, at the 2004 Republican convention. And yet now the Democratic Party in Georgia is very diverse. You have Muslim members, you have Asian American members, you have a lot of diverse members of the Georgia Democratic Party, at least. Do you think that's changing the mentality of who could run for office, changing the identity of the party in a way where people feel more welcome and engaged?
It definitely is. And I think I would just say, like, beyond just partisanship, I think it's really important for representatives to actually represent who the people of Georgia are. And as you mentioned, the Democratic Party has tons of folks from different backgrounds, which I think really shows that we're getting all these new folks involved in politics who maybe typically didn't have a voice or didn't know they had a voice. That's something I've seen because I'm also breaking barriers. I would be the first Indian American legislator in Georgia. A lot of folks in my community are either they're used to talking to, you know, basically other folks who are already in office who aren't part of their community, or they don't even know much about the state legislature. There's a lot more involvement and engagement now that they know someone they're knowing is actually coming and running and saying, hey, we can actually do this stuff around healthcare. We can actually fund education in this way. And I think it's really incredibly amazing opportunity to come empower people in that way. Not by doing anything, but in particular in terms of changing the system, but just by telling them that, hey, the system exists and here's how you can actually impact it.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of these communities in this country, whether it is Indian American or they're Muslim American, because we see that in Georgia. We've seen some great legislators, whether it is young people or this or any other thing. And they don't donate that much, maybe. They don't door knock. Not because they're bad, because they haven't been energized. And we've seen here in Montgomery County, we elected a great new county commissioner, Neil Macasia, who's the first Indian American to be elected to our county commissioners. And our county has more people than many states, so it's a significant job. Do you think that your running could tap into some communities who may become more politically involved as a result?
Definitely. And that's the hope, and that's what I've already been seeing. A lot of folks in the various communities I represent are getting more involved in politics, whether that's the Indian American folks, whether it's folks who are young and Gen Z and realizing, hey, I can also run in this way and I can use Ashwin's run as a blueprint, or it's folks who are in technology and computer science. Mm-hmm. People with that kind of background as well are realizing I can do a startup, but I can also use my knowledge. I can go to law school. I can learn about the tech law and policy part of it. And I can really use that to make sure that we have a better government for everyone.
Now, young people in politics are a huge topic every election, but especially this year, maybe, where a lot of people are scratching their heads, confused about how to talk to or about younger voters, because it seems like polling-wise on issues, they're in one way, but they're not necessarily voting that way in polls. A lot of younger people feel discouraged for many reasons. How can people, Democrats or people in general, tap into that and make sure that, like, young people feel less discouraged and more part of the process?
We have to encourage and support young candidates, because ultimately politics is about making sure that people you have representatives who represent the people. And what's happening now is that a lot of young people want to make a change. But what they see in terms of who's on national politics, who's even in state politics, these folks they don't understand young people. They don't come from that same perspective, and they're not listening either. So I think what's really important is candidates like me, other folks who are Gen Z or their 20s, 30s, etc., who are younger, they need to be more uplifted. Mm-hmm. The party, whether it's the party or other donors, etc., need to consider contributing to folks like me, need to make sure that folks like us are included in these bigger conversations around messaging, whether it's thinking about the Biden campaign or other campaigns as well, and just making sure that we have a voice at the table. I think that's the biggest thing that we can do to make sure we engage the young folks. Because to be honest, if you just give two very old people in their 70s or 80s and ask young people to vote for them, like, sure, some of them may vote, but it's way more compelling to also have really compelling down ballot candidates who young people know actually think like them. And that's going to be way more compelling in terms of getting them to come out and vote.
Yeah. So, I mean, we hear a lot about issues of, you know, that are impacting the younger voters in this country, you know, inflation, childcare, student loans. And it seems like there's no path forward, whether it's for them or by older legislators trying to encourage them, because there's not an on-off switch for those issues, right? You can't just there's not just one simple solution. What kind of things would you like to do to appeal to those groups as an issue, like to make sure that they are talked to, that you think that the legislature can work on?
I actually have a lot of hope for young people because I have friends, young friends, who are both Democrats and Republicans across the spectrum, political spectrum. What I've seen is that there are a lot of challenges which we share in common. And one example is, for example, affordable housing, making sure that it's easier to buy a house and that places like, for example, in Johns Creek, or in the suburbs, house prices are going up. It's really hard to actually go and settle down as a young person. Mm-hmm. And I see that there is an understanding with young people that, hey, here are some common sense issues that we're facing these together. Let's actually make progress on it. So my hope is that as we get young people from both sides of the spectrum, we can actually have more bipartisanship and compromise, because just the fact is young people, regardless of where they're coming from right now, the system isn't working for them. So I think that's one main thing, is how can we economically help these folks to make sure they can get the jobs they need, the training, the education, and things like that. Some of the other issues is also thinking about, how do we best invest in our future so we have the infrastructure needed for sustained growth? One thing I've seen in Atlanta is that as we've grown and grown and grown, and we have suburbs, exurbs, et cetera, our infrastructure hasn't really kept up. We don't have the best public transit system. Our roads are always full of traffic. There's all these issues. We don't have fully access to healthcare, such as we haven't expanded Medicaid yet. We don't have common sense gun laws. There's all these different things, including reproductive rights, where young people really care about. And these are needed in order for young folks to settle down and actually start safe lives and that are successful. And I think those are all areas where I believe we can find consensus, particularly as we get more and more voices from our generation in here to say that, hey, these are actually things that matter for us. Because if you're an 80 something year old, you already own a house, multiple houses, you're not going to be as personally invested in the housing crisis, for example. And I think the more young folks we have, the more of a balance we have as well. And it's going to be a mixture, right? We need to have people from all different age groups, all different kinds of lived experiences. But the more we can make our representatives diverse, the better policy we'll create.
That sounds wonderful, and I agree. But the solutions take time, whether you want them to. Even if you pass a bill, it doesn't get implemented for months or years. It kind of, sometimes they get implemented in stages. Sometimes it's not equitable. They have to take, like, how do you temper expectations? Because that's something I've learned in politics in my time, is that, you know, people wanted they wanted recycling here, and we did it, but then it also meant we had to get rid of one day of trash pickup. I'm like, well, that's fine. You don't need 2 days of trash necessarily, but people don't always like that change. So when you're trying to, how do you keep people energized while making sure their expectations are in check?
I've been very clear to temper expectations. I'm running as a Democrat. We have minorities in both chambers, the House and the Senate in Georgia. We're not going to be able to get every bill passed we propose. And I don't know, like, depends on what the other side wants to do, right? But at the same time, I've been very clear that this is a long-term investment, and politics is not just a one-year, two-year thing to think about. And this part of the mindset shift I want to bring upon, where it's all about long-term sustained investment. And I think in a way, my youth is a good way to kind of represent that. Mm-hmm. Because the fact is, I'm young, I'm in my 20s, but the fact that you're investing in me means that you're looking to the future. And you're thinking about, how can we actually empower these young leaders now so that they can do a lot of work now, but they'll end up being the future leaders of the future. If you look at someone like Chuck Schumer, who's the Senate Majority Leader, he first ran for office when he was 24, 25 years old, straight out of law school in New York. And it was a state legislature seat, and ever since then, he didn't lose an election since then.
Mm-hmm.
But if you think about it, like the people who are running for local office at young ages right now, we are the future leaders. So we're asking folks to invest in us, not because we can solve all the problems today, but because we will have that outsized voice, if you give us that voice, to really make sure we can deal with the issues that will impact our nation for decades to come.
I mean, Joe Biden himself was only in his 20s when he first ran for office, right? He wasn't even old enough to be sworn in. So, I mean, you could, within a few decades, be the next Joe Biden at that rate, right?
I mean, anything's possible, right? And that's one thing which has really resonated with me. I loved about President Biden's State of the Union address, where he addressed concerns about his age, but he also talked about when he was first sworn in as senator, everyone is like, you're too young to be a senator. Mm-hmm. And then now they're like, you're too old to be president. And what he said is that it doesn't matter what your age is, but it matters what's your ability to listen, what's your ability to govern, what's your ability to bring people together. And that's what voters should look at. And I think, you know, that resonated with me too. And it was nice to see that, you know, this is not a new story. It's an old story. There's been many examples of this where people always have doubts versus age or other kinds of things. And it's up to people running for office to prove themselves and say, explain to voters why they're worth it.
Yeah, well, you sound more put together to me than most people I know in their 30s, 40s, and 50s. Nothing against them, but just I see a lot of people who have been working, advocating for things, who don't seem to click the same things you're talking about. But you say about bringing people together, and your opponent was one of those fake electors. So the politics in your area are kind of divisive, right? You have, I'm sure... Yep. He got elected, right? Like, people supported him for that, like, maybe not knowing that. Like, they didn't expect him to be doing that. But how do you bring people together in that kind of political environment?
I would say a lot of the reason why folks like my opponent got elected is not necessarily because of the widespread popular support, but I think more just voter apathy. Just as an example, my opponent... I think he raised $500K last year for his election. $300K was his own money. So he, a lot of it was just...
Where do you have $300,000? Like,
I don't have much money, but he does, right? It just tells you, like, you know, it's a lot of the money is coming from corporations and PACs, to be honest, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so it's, and I know my district well. I grew up here. I know a lot of people here were not happy in 2022, which is like, the choices they had, they just felt like it's politics as usual. Sure, they heard some news about the fake elector stuff. At that time, it hadn't blown up as much. And I think since then, since the story has become clearer, what role he played, people are not happy. And I think what my goal is, you know, I think it needs to be clear what my opponent did in his lack of judgment.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I'm trying to bring together a vision of unity and trying to say, let's move past that. Let's not have someone who's just going to keep dragging into these national controversies. And people in the suburbs, honestly, they just want a representative who will work hard for them and isn't going to like create so much noise in that way. They want someone who's just going to be working hard in that way. And that's what I've been saying. And I believe the message has been working both for Democrats and also moderate folks, independents, who just want someone, a steady hand at the state capitol, to make sure that we work on things. And one thing I've been telling folks is that, like, even if you disagree with me, in fact, I would love to talk with you. I love nothing more than talking with folks I don't agree with, because that's what makes me a better decision maker and making sure that I'm really considering all the equities. And I think that's often something that people aren't used to hearing, at least here. And I think that makes people think again and realize that, yes, everyone has their own perspectives, but what we really need is a representative who will listen to us regardless of what perspective you're from. And that's one thing I'm committed to doing. And I think that's one area where I hope voters will see that I'm the one open to that and can actually represent their interests in that way.
Yeah, Georgia politics has obviously been such a big deal. Like, when Barack Obama ran for re-election, you know, Georgia was called for Mitt Romney within a minute of the polls closing, right? And obviously it's changed a lot. And from my understanding, from what reading about Georgia, talking to others, there were a lot of people who had voted for Joe Biden who had traditionally voted for people like Mitt Romney and John McCain and George Bush before. So there's a lot of Republicans who maybe they don't like the direction of the Republican Party. Like, they're not far. They're not all of people who would be into the voting conspiracies. They're not into that kind of crazy stuff. Do you think that there's a lot of people who are gettable now for Democrats and independents? Like, there's a lot of people who, yeah, they may have voted Republican in the past, but that party has kind of left them, and now they want something that's just about governing.
Definitely. If you look at, for example, the number of votes Nikki Haley got in the primary, 77,000 votes, that was just a primary election. That just shows that there's a huge segment of folks here who are moderate, whether it's moderate Republicans or independents, who just aren't happy with the, you know, honestly, extremism of Donald Trump and what he represents. And I think what Joe Biden and Democrats have been, historically been doing is been able to have this big tent where they're actually able to say, like, yes, I know you disagree with me on certain issues, but, you know, we all care about having a competent leader. We care about having our democracy and not overturning our elections. We care about representing democratic process. And I think there's a lot of voters who are going to flip for that reason as well. But it does take time and it does take effort to do so. You can't just take any votes for granted, whether they're Democrats or they're independents. It requires the door knocking, requires going and talking with people and really being genuine and saying, I care about what you care about. So I think with that kind of effort, we can definitely make that happen.
Well, great. Now, the podcast is called You Should Run. And like I said, I think that the main mission here is to encourage other people to run for office. From your limited experience in this campaign already and from talking with people, why would you be encouraging other people to consider running for office too, whether it's for state legislatures or other things?
I would encourage everyone to run for office if they're able to and they're willing to put the time in. I think the main reason, because it's an opportunity to create something completely new. That's something which I've seen, where too often, especially young folks, you're going to school, you're going to college, you're getting a job. Those are all things that new society expects you to do, and you're fitting a certain mold of what needs to happen. But I think when running for office, it's an opportunity to be so creative. You can break out of that mold and really inspire people across different generations. That's something I've seen been able to do, where I'm able to not only talk to my peers, you know, folks who are in their 20s, but people from across the age spectrum, mm-hmm. people from different communities, and say, here's why we need this kind of leadership in the future. And regardless of whether you win or lose, it's an incredible experience just to talk to people and get them engaged in the political process. Even if you engaged like two or three additional voters during your time running for office, that's worth it, because that's two or three people who are now being on top of things, understanding better about the legislature, all those things. I had so many conversations where I explained to people what the state Senate even was, because mm-hmm. a lot of folks didn't realize it existed. And from that reason, it's so much worth it. And if we had thousands of people do this across the country, imagine how much more civically engaged, how much politically active, and how much more representative our democracy would be.
Yeah, I 100% agree. One thing before I finish here, you just brought up, as you've talked with people across generations. I talked with Mayor John Bowders from California a while back, and he was talking about cross-generational housing, like having new housing. It was for seniors, I think, and they wanted to have at least 20% of it for younger people. And it really stuck out to me, and because he was talking about the relationship that young people have with people who are 65 and older. And it's kind of the people in between, like in their 40s and 50s, who are often, I wouldn't say the problem, but they're busy with school, with jobs, they're busy with kids. So maybe like, but that he saw a lot of really great interactions between younger people and older people. Is that something that you think is a possible collaboration or possible shift that we can see where people like you can build a relationship with older Americans in a really positive way that many people just might not recognize or understand?
That's a great point. And now that I think about it, it's just like I'm sure everyone's been in the family situation where you're with your parents and the parents are mad at their kids, but the grandparents are like always like very nice to the kids and very much like, you know, giving them all they want. And like, there is that idea of like when you're going across generations, there's more of that kind of bond. And I think it's because when people who are younger have more of that ambition, have more of the energy, the idealism. And when people get really old and they're closer to the end of their life, that's when they, you know, they're reflecting on their lives. They have the wisdom to realize that, hey, like we, you know, it's important to help the next generation to continue the work we've been doing. And I think people in the middle are, there's just so many things that life throws at you, and it's just really tough to do all those other things, right? So I think that's probably why we're seeing that dynamic. But it's definitely something which I've seen as well, and I plan to use, right? Because I think a lot of people who are, you know, in their later end of lives are very, very happy to see young folks stepping up and running, because they see that this is our future, and they see an opportunity for them to mentor, to help their legacy in terms of making sure that the young folks are empowered to lead the future. And it's not to say that I'm not reaching out to everyone, and even folks from all kinds of age groups are also excited. But I think in particular, the folks who are senior citizens or even older are some of the most excited followers that, and people who will vote for you.
Yeah, I have seen that myself, and I think it's really underappreciated. When I first ran for office, I was in my early 30s, so considered young for running. And I found that some of the best support were from older people in our community who, they want to see a change. They're excited for it. And it was the other people who were the problem. So first, before we finish here, because I'm really enjoying talking with you about these things, like I said, there's a lot of cynicism from younger people about politics lately. What gives you hope? Because you sound like someone who's very optimistic. Why do you feel hopeful about the future of Georgia or the country in general?
I feel hopeful because I realize that young people are not in it alone. Mm-hmm. I've seen the power of building alliances with other generations, other groups, and I've seen how powerful that can be. I think part of the reason why young people are often hopeless, or not hopeless, don't have hope, is because they soon realize that, okay, there's all this money in politics, young people don't have money, therefore young people can't have influence. But I think what you can start to realize is that you can convince other folks who aren't as in your generation to support you. And that's been one big reason why I've been successful so far, is I've been building those bridges between young folks, people who are already established business folks, people, community leaders, existing folks in politics. And I've realized that we can tap at these other resources. And in a way, it's a way of collaboration. And I think that if we continue to build those bridges and we continue to not just think we're alone and by ourselves, we can accomplish great things.
Oh, great. If people want to accomplish things with you, they want to learn more about your history, about your ideas, or even get in touch, what's the best way that they can follow you online?
Please go to my website. It's oshwinforgeorgia.com. So it's spelled F-O-R.
Great. Georgia. I will link to it in the description to the podcast. I really appreciate talking with you. It gives me some hope and optimism for the future, not just for Georgia, but for everywhere. Because if we can elect people like you in Pennsylvania and other states, I think we'd be in good shape. So best of luck to you, Ashwin. And if you're listening, maybe you should run for office too. Best of luck, and thank you so much.
Thank you, Tony.